Have you ever lost your son for 3 days?
No, I don't think so.
Today we're talking about how Mary and Joseph did. Hello, welcome to the Midweek Move, podcast extension of the Healing Place, the podcast where we examine the scriptures line by line, verse by verse, and ask ourselves, what is happening here? Today, ladies and gentlemen, I am joined again, and I'm very excited about it, by my good friend, Mr. Ben Schmaltz. How you doing, brother?
I am wonderful. Good to see you all again. good to see the cameras that are going to be seeing you, but we're glad you're here tuning in. It's going to be a great day.
Oh, man. Last week, we had a really great conversation about Mary and Joseph taking Jesus to the be dedicated at the temple, and some powerful things taking place. And what I love, Ben, you have a tendency to understand this, right? You draw things out of me, man. I love talking with you because I get excited about stuff. And I just so appreciate you taking the time to be here with us.
Absolutely.
And
love it.
Last week's episode was amazing. And this week we're driving into an interesting conversation because I don't know, some people today would call it poor parenting. but we're gonna find out why it's not necessarily. As we continue our conversation in Luke chapter 2, and again, we're now four episodes into the book of Luke, and we're only in chapter 2. I really want to encourage you guys, go back to the playlist, check out Luke, check out the intro. We had, Pastor and I had several great conversations. I think we did 6 episodes on Luke chapter 1 alone. And then before you, we had Doug Parker from Destiny Church and Direct Message Ministries, and he and I handled the birth of Jesus. Now we're in this section. It's a really, there's so much richness in the scriptures. I mean, you and I covered about 20 verses last week, and it was like an hour long message conversation. But there's some richness if we're willing to ask questions. And really go, well, what's going on here? And so I want to encourage you, if you guys are doing Bible studies, don't just read the scriptures. Dig into them, ask questions, man. And if we can help you with those questions, reach out to us, mediahub@thministryreport.com. We'd love to help you walk through those things. So also you can message Ben because I'll have his socials in the comment section down below. All right, let's jump into it, starting in verse 41. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. I'm going to pause right there because, again, this kind of reemphasizes what we talked about last week, that they were like, we're doing what the Lord has called us
Doing it, dotting every I.
Every I. So in Jewish society, there's three main feasts that they have. Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacle. And again, these are things that this is what they do. And if they can, they go to Jerusalem. If nothing else, they really make an effort to be in Jerusalem for Passover itself. It's very important. Now, at the age of 12, this gets interesting because age 13, 12, 13, that's where you have what they call the bar mitzvah, where a young man becomes a man. And apparently, they really work to make sure the child is at least in Jerusalem for Passover around that time frame. Because what happens is the bar mitzvah, they become what they call a man of the covenant. And during this time frame, because again, this isn't just a party. Some people think this is just a celebration. But this is a very spiritual moment also. There's a lot of things. And so they want their child to be present to really understand what's going on. So gathered in Jerusalem, and again, we're painting a picture for you guys. It's not just, you know, the normal people. The top scholars of the people, the most religious and pious individuals are present here at the temple in Jerusalem for this celebration. And that's going to become important for us here in a little bit, but I need you guys to understand what's taking place. This is not just a party, but this is a spiritual and holy moment taking place as they celebrate the Passover that took place. Now, I will say this. If you've ever been to a Passover meal, it gets pretty fun. It's pretty wild.
They know how to celebrate, that's for sure.
So, but I want to ask you this. Why is it important for parents to be intentional about making sure their children take part in spiritual practices, like going to church on a weekly basis, being part of what God has for him? Why is that important?
Well, I think it lays a foundation of our belief. It lays a foundation of living for God and the importance of God. I mean, left on their own, we're naturally going to tend, humans, childs, adults, all of us, we're going to just go to the thing that's fun or the thing that's enjoyable or the thing that, and so many of those pleasures that we call fun are things that are just going to not bring you closer to God. And I think when you're young, if you really get a good foundation, you understand the importance, you have a leg up So when you become a young adult, you become a young teenager, older teenager rather, you understand that these temptations are just not worth it. Mm. And I don't want to get set. I just listened to a testimony of a guy in our youth group. He's an adult, but he shared in our youth group with our teenagers his testimony about how he was in youth group and then he wandered for about 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And how he wished he wouldn't have wandered for 12 years because he can't get those 12 years back. That he was, it was almost like a forewarning, hey, take it serious, because if you don't take it serious, you'll find yourself, I might not have ever had a chance to come back and be a prodigal son, but I am. That was that testimony, and it's a wonderful testimony, but it was a warning for our students, hey, don't belittle what's happening in your church and in your life, because God has such a great plan for you. It's important to have that foundation laid so that later in life we're able to stand strong against the attacks of the enemy in this world.
Word. So good. And I appreciate, again, it's that laying that foundation. We've heard testimonies just like that over the years. I can't tell the number of people who have, like, I've known that they went to church as a young man or a young woman, and high school hit or ended, and they went to college, and they just lost their mind.
Yeah.
I was just talking with a parent the other day who is walking through some stuff with their own adult child. Raised them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord. They were faithful to the church. They were in church. I heard an old evangelist. Old evangelist. He goes, I had a drug problem as a kid. My mama drug me to church on Sundays, on Sunday nights, on Wednesdays. I had a major drug problem.
Good dad
and
joke.
My friend goes, my daughter had a drug problem because I drug her to church every week.
Yeah.
But now they're an adult. They're on their own thing. He's worried about his daughter.
Sure.
And that's understandable because now they're out of the purview. We kind of talked about this last week about sending a child off. But he knows, what I remind him is, like, you set a foundation for your child.
Sure.
That you love, you care about, you set a foundation.
Yeah.
They know where to go. They know who the Lord is. And they know that if something happens, first off, they know dad's present.
Mm-hmm.
They know, but they also know the foundation of what the Lord has for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, again, that's why it's so key for parents. Your kid may not like church. It happens. But lay the foundation. Be respectful, be honest, be caring about it. You know, I'm not telling you, because we had a conversation a while back about on our main YouTube page for The Healing Place about gathering your kids around the table and being intentional about sharing the gospel. And some person, like, well, that's fine, but it can be overbearing. And there are some parents who are overbearing and dumb about it. And we can see plenty of evidence of that being wrong. But if you are doing it right, you're laying the foundation. Your child has to go, when they become an adult, is this faith of mine or not?
Yeah.
And so that's why it's intentional about putting them in places where they go, this is safe. Yeah. This is what God looks like. This is where I can return to.
Yeah, it's so good.
So, cool. All right, let's continue on the conversation because this is where things are getting wild with the story about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Starting in verse 43. And when the feast had ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it. But supposing him to be in the group, they went a day's journey. But then they began to search for him among their relatives and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem searching for him. And in 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them, asking questions. Let's rewind a little bit because we'll come back to that verse. Again, this is interesting because it kind of gives us a look at the type of community they were in.
Yeah.
It's unthinkable today for a parent to go, have you seen our kid? No, I haven't seen him. We'll look for him tomorrow.
That's right.
We don't think about that.
Yeah. I mean, you caught me off guard with the intro of today's episode when you asked me if I ever lost my kid for 3 days. And I was like, what? No. But then I'm like, oh, yeah, put in perspective what we're about to talk about.
Right.
I can't imagine not kissing my child on the forehead before they go to sleep if I'm anywhere near them.
Right.
So to even know, like, well, where's my, the culture was different. Probably they were in a big group of people traveling all together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they thought grandma had him or grandpa had him or somebody, you know, auntie, uncle, somebody's watching little Jesus, out there. Maybe he's a man now, so we don't tuck him in at night. I don't know if he's had that bar mitzvah, but I can't imagine a world where I'm making any kind of journey and the first thing on my mind is the safety of my children.
Right.
My wife would kill me if that happened. Like, I would be dead. I would be missing. You guys would be looking for me.
Right.
Man, it's wild. Just that mind. As a father, it's just a wild story. I love it. I absolutely love it. And it's so practical. Like, sometimes we don't. No, always know where our kids are.
Exactly. Kind of figure. My mom tells a story about when she was a little girl. And after church, her mom is in the kitchen making dinner and stuff like that. And she turns to my mom's siblings, goes, where's Mary Beth? And they're all like, I don't know. And right as they're grabbing the keys to go back to the church to find my mom, mm-hmm. the doorbell rings and my mom's Sunday school teacher there with my mom. my 8-year-old little mom.
Oh, I love Sunday school.
And they're teachers. Like, you left her at church.
Left her at church.
It happens. It happens.
It does happen.
But what's interesting about this is this really speaks to the type. This wasn't like, oh, we left church. Oh, we forgot about them. They're in a community.
Yeah.
They're in a community that's connected by their common faith that's right. tight-knit. And they go, this is a safe place.
Yeah,
we're in a traveling group, a family. We're talking. Some of them, yes, they're relatives. Some of them are just, they're people part of their community. There was a trust of the community, and it was healthy. It illustrates the importance of having a strong and healthy faith community that can walk through stuff. And I know that's a hard thing to see, especially today. We have all these crazy stories.
Sure.
But how do we foster a safe and healthy community today, Ben?
Yeah. Well, I never had to travel and lose my kid. But when I'm at church, there's a few times where if mom's not there and I have the kids, I don't maybe keep a close eye on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm busy doing the pastoral type duties, talking to people, shaking hands, mm-hmm. fixing something wrong in the sound booth, whatever the case may be.
Right.
And, I looked the other Sunday, I looked around, I had Eva with me. My boy usually comes, he's 8 years old. My daughter's 4. 8-year old knows, hey, it's time for Sunday school. All I have to do is say, hey, go to Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
I had the girl with me this time. The boy stayed home with mom and they were coming later. And, she wanted to go with daddy. So I had her. It's a little more difficult. I'm practicing worship and, I look up, it's 9:20 at mm-hmm. this point. We're about to break out of practice and go into our next meeting before the service kicks off at 10. And I look around, I'm like, oh my goodness, where's my daughter? I haven't seen my daughter in 45 minutes probably.
Right.
Like I just forgot about her. And I felt very much probably like this. But it's because, now granted, the kids pastor happened to see my daughter and knew I was on the platform. So she took her to the class for me.
Right.
Thank God, because I have a community that I trust.
Right.
Now, not everybody that walks in our church doors is in part of that community initially. Right. So there's still safety precautions and security teams and everybody that's helping keeping everybody safe.
Sure.
But I had a kids pastor that I knew. Well, I hoped was watching my daughter. Again, that was one of the dad fails, but it's so important just to have, I don't know who came up with the phrase. I don't think it's a church phrase, but it takes a village. You know, it takes mm-hmm. a community of people to raise family and to be there close. And it's hard to trust people.
Yeah.
But when you find that right, close-knitted family, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys have here at the Healing Place we have over at Gateway, it's just a close family where we just feel like, hey, this is a part of our extended family.
Right.
When we have Thanksgiving, we have Christmas, we're not just with our family. We're inviting people that don't have,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're part of that community that maybe their family's out of town or they don't have, hey, come join us.
Yeah.
We're a family. And it's so good to have people that are trustworthy like that to encourage you, to help you in those times. I'm glad there's grandpas in my life that can tell me, hey, when I was a husband or a father, I did this, this, and this. You should try it out or don't try this, this, or this because, you know, it goes both ways. So those communities are huge. And so find yourself one. Don't be scared to open up. And if you're scared and you're start small. Do a small group. Get one or two.
Yeah.
Take some people out, not literal date, but like go get coffee with them and just kind of, you don't marry off the first date when you first meet somebody. You don't get married to them. Don't give them all your drama. Just figure out if, hey, this is a trustworthy person.
Right.
You know, and then as time goes on, you can grow that community a little bit. And it just gets so helpful when you're living life together with somebody.
There are two key aspects of the explanation that you have that we need to point out. First off, it's time.
Yeah.
There's time and investment. People act like they show up at church and should just be like, boom, wide open, we're all good.
Right.
I don't know you from Adam.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
We're going to have to work on this type of thing. But also, being present.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you there are people that I've seen over the years that like, well, I don't like church because nobody cares about me. You're not here.
It's hard.
Or I don't like church because nobody deals with me. Have you opened up?
Yeah.
We had a gentleman years ago that I knew and kind of complained about church folks across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it because he was talking with my associate pastor, Matt, and about just complaining. And he goes, you know, the Bible says that if you want friends, you must first be friendly. Are you being friendly?
That's such wisdom, and it should be common sense, but it's so uncommon. That's such a good. I love that he brought that up.
Yeah,
I mean, that's such a good point.
I mean, that's a teaching from the scriptures.
Yeah,
And it's there's two. I teach a course called Soul Rest every so often with our students and in groups, and it's a great training course of discipleship. And in it, there's a section that talks about two main spiritual disciplines, and they're taught together: confession, fellowship.
Yeah,
and they're caught together because of this. In order for us to have true confession with somebody, we have to have fellowship.
Yeah,
but you can't have fellowship until you have confession.
Right.
And I say confession, I'm not talking about like, all right, tell me all the sins that you have now. All right, but it's confession of like, I'm having a bad day and I've been struggling with sleep.
Yeah,
it's confessions of, you know, I'm trying to figure out what to do with my child right now because they're a bit rambunctious. I'm not sure how to handle things. That's hard to open up.
Yeah.
If you don't have fellowship with people, but you don't really develop that fellowship until you start having that. So it takes you being present. It takes time. It takes
the
risk of opening up.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this is easy. This is this is hard to do, man. It's terrifying.
Sure.
To go, maybe I don't have it all together. Yep. And giving people the opportunity to say, to do the right thing, giving people the opportunity to fail.
Yeah.
And it's hard to build that, that thing.
Sure.
But when you can, and then when it does, and again, this also requires, again, I'm put this out there because there are some churches that it's us four no more.
Right.
It does require the church body to open up. It does require pastors to go, hey, we need to be a little better at things.
Yep. Yep.
But when we have that, it becomes a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And at the same time, when you have that, you got to be honoring of it.
Yeah.
You and I are youth pastors, and we've taken many students to camp.
Scary. I'm just kidding.
Right? But what's scary most is for the parent.
Sure.
Because they're going,
I don't know, do I trust?
Right.
No, I had several testimonies of parents not trusting sending their kids. And then they go and they're like, oh, man, it was so worth it. Thanks for doing that. Or opposite. And they were like, they're never going on that again. You know? And I had one or two of those. And it's you know, I get it. I get it for sure.
I had a, when Celeste and I stepped back into student ministry here, our first youth trip, we took a parent. We had a parent send their kid, and it was the first time their child has been away from mom and dad for more than a couple of days.
Wow.
Ever. And we took them down to the middle of nowhere, Louisiana, to some beautiful and growing campgrounds.
Yep.
And the kid had a blast.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And I talked to the parent. You know, part of the reason why the parent dealt with this well is because I have time investment with that parent.
That's good.
I've known that, literally known that parent since I was a child.
Yeah.
since we were both teenagers. So they knew me. They trusted me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have to build that. And when we do that, all of a sudden we could, in theory, lose our child for 3 days.
Sure. It's easy to do it, Ken. We have a rule that you just come back with the same number of students as you left with. It doesn't matter if it's the same students. As long as it's the same number, you're good.
Yeah. Mine is the same number of students, but also no DNA missing from their bodies.
Right. Okay. So. Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. We'll add that to the list. It's so silly.
But let's continue on because it gets interesting. Absolutely. Verse 46 through 47 says this. After 3 days, they found him in the temple. 3 days.
Yeah.
Mom and dad have been searching for 3 days. All right. He's been missing for about five or six days now. They found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were amazed at his understanding and his answers. So after several days, they find Jesus in the temple courts. And again, who's at temple courts? Everyone who was there for Passover. Who's there for Passover? The greatest scholastic Jewish minds of the era.
This is so impressive because if you study at all Jewish culture and Jewish heritage, we've really, me and my wife, and my wife more so than I, have really dived into just trying to understand Bible from a Jewish perspective because we're Jewish, we're Christians, but we were Jewish, like the law, it all came through Jews, right?
It's a Jewish faith fulfilled.
It's a Jewish faith fulfilled, right? That's a perfect way to say it. And so we've been trying to just kind of open up our eyes to a different way of looking at Eastern way instead of a Western mindset. And these people I get ashamed of how little I know the Bible. When I'm looking at these guys, your average fisherman knew more of the Bible than our scholars in the church today, because they just had such an honor for it. It's important. It is the bread of life, as Jesus would refer to later in his ministry.
Right.
That's what the word is. And here, a 12-year-old, I was amazed the other day. I had a student who's homeschooled, so he came up one Wednesday. He just wanted to hang out with me for the day. And I was showing, I gave him a little print out of paper. I said, hey, here's five or six of these. This is how I study the Bible. It's just like three little quick basic Bible study questions that you can answer. That was on a Wednesday. On Sunday, he brought back a folder of them all filled out with little devotions. And he's 13 years old. And I was impressed. Word. I was amazed because I was like, what is this kid? What's going on in this kid's life? And that amazed me.
Yeah.
Jesus is teaching theologians of Jewish law. Like, right. I can barely read Leviticus without falling asleep. These guys knew it word for word, right. And they studied it, and they could teach on it so effortlessly. And they're standing there amazed at the teachings of Jesus as a 12-year-old.
Yeah. He's not asking child questions like, did Adam and Eve have belly buttons? Like, that's not the questions he's asking.
I was eating Play-Doh probably at 12.
Like, they're in awe.
Yeah. I mean, it's just wild.
What's coming out of him? And again, this, and I bring this again, Luke is bringing this to this passage because he needs Theophilus to understand this is who Jesus is. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It wasn't that he became an adult and all of a sudden you expect an adult. He had wisdom beyond his ages at 12.
12 years old. He's already figuring out.
Yeah.
He knows his father. He has spent time. And a credit to his parents, as we talked about last week, for raising him the right way.
Yeah.
Laying that foundation, as we talked this week, laying that foundation of, man, this stuff is important, Jesus. It's going to be important for you. And he just fell in love with it, obviously.
Yeah.
He's God, and he falls in love with the Father, but that's still, it's just, he's still a man.
Right.
He's still a 12-year-old boy.
Right.
And he's already got this just great wisdom that's associated with his ministry as a 12-year-old.
So good. Now, things get a little interesting here in a second. Verse 48, it says this, and when his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been searching for you in great distress. Mary is scolding Jesus for making them worry.
Yeah.
Like, and I love this so much because this is the moment. It does a great job of humanizing this family.
Absolutely. It's such a real emotion.
I mean, it shows them as real people. I remember my mom lost me for all of 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. We were at some weird like outdoor park or something like that. And I went down a slide and it was like downstairs. And all of a sudden, I didn't know where they were. Like, I didn't know how to get back to where they were. So I went the opposite direction where I was supposed to go. So my mom's freaking out because she gets down to where I'm supposed to be and I'm not there.
Yeah.
Apparently she told me to wait and I did not. I'm just going, I got to find my mom. And the first thing she did was, why did you do that? She's upset because there's this fear inside of her. That's so human.
Yeah.
And here is Mary, very human. And I'm sure Joseph was like, I'm going to take you out and whoop you, son, because you scared the life out of me for the last 3 days. You know?
Yeah.
We don't have that written, but I'm sure that's the emotions.
Yeah, no, right.
And so this is a question I have for you. Why is it important for us to understand that the people in the Bible, even the quote-unquote superstars of the Bible, are just normal people like everyone else.
Just normal people.
Why is it important for us to keep that in the forefront of our minds?
Because if it makes it relatable to who we are. I mean, I'm no expert of a parent. I've been mad at my son for stuff like that, and I'm thinking, I'm reading this story like, are they serious? Why would they get mad? It wasn't his fault. You're the adult. And yet I do the same thing. You know,
right.
If my son goes, wanders off, or he jumps out of the car too quick and jumps in front of a car. I mean, they're children. They haven't fully understood. They don't understand. Why are we getting angry with them? But it's such a human reaction to just life in general that I love that Jesus, God, the Father uses people who are ordinary to do extraordinary.
Yeah.
And again, it's so that you can see the power of God through their lives. And because there's no perfect person, there's no superheroes in the world. I mean, they're impressive people, but they're not superheroes. And but God uses such ordinary men and women. I mean, all the disciples, just ordinary people that were looked past. The rabbis didn't choose them, yet Jesus later in life chose them. And they do incredible things because of their dependence of the Lord and their understanding of the Lord. And Mary and Joseph are no different. And it's just evident to say, hey, look, you know, we were mad. We wanted to beat this kid, you know, making mama worry and stress out. What are you thinking?
Right.
And I love Jesus's response to it's so perfect.
Let's jump into that because he says this really interesting, starting in verse 4:9. And he said to them, why were you looking for me? did you not know that I must be in my father's house? And some translations add in the vocabulary of doing my father's business. And they did not understand the saying that he spoke to them. This is such an interesting aspect because Jesus' response, did you not know that I must be in my father's house? It highlights something very specific. We know mm-hmm. from our conversations about John's birth that the child is supposed to take on the job of the father. That was a whole fight yeah. about John being named John and not Zacharias, because mm-hmm. according to culture, he was supposed to be named yeah. Zacharias. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to be a Levite in the temple,
yep.
supposed to wear his father's ephod. That's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
But no, we're going to name him John, something that we don't have a John in the family.
Right.
That was all akin to disowning their child, even.
Right.
And Jesus is like,
no, you're right.
No, I'm going to be yeah. in my father's house.
Yeah.
Do my father's business, yeah. teaching the world, doing. Now, in the flesh, his father is Joseph. He's a right. carpenter.
Right.
But here we have Jesus. And this is, again.
I was wondering if you're going to catch it, because it says, I mean, Mary's response is your father and I have been frantic. And yeah. then Jesus' response is, I'm in my father's house.
Right.
Like, he has recognized at this point in the story his call of God on his life. So right. I was wondering if we were going to cover that.
Yeah, yeah.
I had it in my notes to say, so hey, good. Bring this up if Dallas doesn't. But you started, you did. You brought it up, and I love it.
Good, I've got points.
it's just so, like he's recognized, like, I have an earthly dad here. My yeah. dad's wonderful, but he's not, compared to my father, I'm about my father's business. Like,
yeah.
Jesus said, let the dead bury the dead. When the one guy's like, hey, can I come follow you? But let me first go bury my father. He's like, no, be about my father's. Like, I'm about my father's business. Right. Not because I don't love my dad or mm-hmm. respect my dad. I love him to the moon and back. He's my incredible dad.
And we know that Jesus does become a carpenter. It's yes. not that he just disowns
that. No, he does. He does that and takes care. Some people believe in reading some commentaries and stuff that Jesus, maybe Joseph had passed away later in, yeah. in life before the ministry of Jesus, and he had to take care of the family for a little while. I mean, that's one of the theories that's what happened in those years that we don't have
right.
Anything written in context in the scriptures of what Jesus was doing. But man, he was a good carpenter. You
yeah.
know, he was growing. We'll get to that point in a second. I'm going to do it myself. But I love it. I love that we said that, because it's my father's. I'm in my father's house.
Right.
My father might be worried, but that father, I am now following this great plan.
Exactly.
Even as a 12-year-old, he recognized that.
Absolutely. And it's important for us to understand, this is one of the first times that Jesus is identifying himself with the Father in heaven. Mm-hmm. And this is a big deal, because one of the predominant arguments against Jesus is that, well, Jesus never said he was God. Mm-hmm. Well, let's rewind things. The fact that Jesus is saying that his Father is God, because that's what he's saying yeah. in this passage, that's heresy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the beginning of all the naysayers.
Yeah, you know, if he's saying that and he's not, that's heretical.
I'm in my father's house.
You know, I'm in my father's house. And he's saying, I am akin to the Father. We are connected. This is it. Jesus is, this is the beginning of Jesus saying, I am God.
Yeah.
I am divine in yeah. this moment. Yeah, this yeah. is the first time we have that said
yep.
in Jesus' life. And that's something we have to keep in mind. This isn't a story about just like a teacher.
Oh, that's a great point.
I think it was it C.S. Lewis that you have to see Jesus as either liar, lunatic, or Lord?
Yeah.
There's only three options. Was it Lewis or was it?
I don't know. Strobel? I don't remember. I've heard the phrase.
Yeah, yeah. But
I don't know who.
Liar, lunatic, or Lord. That's all we can see Jesus as. Sure. And he's going, I'm Lord.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
In a discussion.
He declared it at 12 years old to mom and dad first.
Right.
Earthly dad.
So good. So good.
I love it.
And then we had this at the very end. They don't understand what he spoke. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was submissive to them. And his mother treasured up all these things in his heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Jesus did everything he was supposed to do.
Yep.
The reason why he can be our atonement is because he lived a life of a man.
Yep.
I think it's Galatians that he did not, that it says that he laid down his divinity, put it to the side, and lived as a man. And that's the reason why he was able to do what he did, mm-hmm. because he was submissive to his parents. I don't care what what do they call those? The Gnostic gospels and these lost documents that are all dated, by the way, hundreds of years after the events, saying that Jesus was disruptive. There's a Gnostic gospel called the Book of Thomas. Uh-huh. Crazy story where Jesus is actually like, literally, he's like zapping birds out of the sky and killing them. And then people are mad. And so Joseph comes and scolds Jesus, and Jesus scolds Joseph for scolding him. Like that is completely anti.
Yeah, what
we see here, that he was submissive to them.
Yeah, no, he said, all right, I'll go home with you.
Yeah. He says, all right, let's do this thing. And it says that he increased the wisdom and the stature and in favor of God and man.
That's huge. That's huge. I mean, obviously we know he grows in favor with God. He's the Son of God. He's one with God. But the all in man is great, because it's so important that our reputation as a Christians, we should all be growing in favor in our workplaces, in our schools, where we find ourselves. Like we should be growing. Now, there'll be people that won't love you because you're a man of God, but that you should have, your integrity shouldn't be that reason.
You should
be a man of the word. You should be a man of or woman. If you stand on the godly principles, they have no fault from you other than you're a Christian and they don't like you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that there's too many of us that cave to the world's customs and longing to be in a certain standing, that we look past integrity. Maybe we slide the tail, you know, we do something a little unethical with business in our job or whatever the case would be, to try to get a leg up, or we're cutthroat and trying to get that promotion.
Right.
Grow in favor with men. Every person that I know really loved Jesus, you can see it on them. I love that person. I adore that person. They're some of my favorite people. I think I mentioned sitting with that lady last week in the hospital, and she, I love her to death. She reminds me of just God's best friend. Like, just she's somebody that just loves Jesus with all her heart.
Yeah.
And it's so evident. Everybody that knows her loves her.
Yeah.
You can't find a fault in her.
Yeah.
Because she's so committed to who God is. She grew in favor with people, with God first, and then with people, you know, and I think that's great that it's listed that way, because you fall in love with God. It should, in return, help your favor with people.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I like what you said at the front end. It doesn't mean that everyone's going to like you necessarily.
Right, because people are still going to hate the fact that they hated Jesus, they're going to hate you, right?
Exactly.
That's what Jesus taught.
But, and at the same time, and that doesn't mean assuming you're a perfect person. You may mess up, you may do something stupid.
Right.
But the key is this: you do something dumb and you go, man, I repent.
Right.
And that's a whole aspect of honoring God more. Dave was a man after God's own heart.
I was about to say the same thing.
Even though he was an adulterer, some commentary suggests maybe he may have been a rapist, and he did all this kind of stuff, but he was a man after God's own heart because he was genuinely repentive.
Yeah.
And owned up to it and walked it out.
Yeah. Honored one of the most celebrated Israel Jewish men in history. You know, and it's amazing that that's just how the Lord works. Like he sees your flaws, and they're big deals to him. There was consequences that David had to walk through, but at the same time, I mean, you just with the heart to say, God, help me, and the willingness to own your mistakes and embrace your mistakes, trying not to cover them up.
Word.
Man, the Lord will use you in incredible ways.
Yeah, and restore you in relationship
and grow
to him.
You in favor with man.
Word. Yeah. So good.
Love it.
Well, guys, that's our conversation through the book of Luke. Thanks so much, man, Luke 2, chapter 2. But thanks for being part of this conversation, man, for the last 2 weeks. We're going to hear from you guys. How has this encouraged you? Has it challenged you? How can we pray with you? Are you walking through some stuff maybe where you need prayer right now? And maybe you've been challenged about the integrity aspect of things. Maybe you know, the Lord restores. He heals us. And if you need prayer for anything, reach out to us, mediahub@thbc.com. You can check out the Facebook page, Midweek Move. I want to encourage you guys, share this out with other individuals if it's really encouraged you. And let us know how God is moving your life through these. Until next time, have a great week.